Hey, it's your boy JC. Welcome to the Dream 10X podcast, episode 73. Inventing Iron Man by E. Paul Zare. And you introduced me to Dr. Zare.
I did.
And his series of books.
I did.
And I don't know if this is the first or the third or the second, but the other two books of his that we've reviewed on this podcast are Becoming Batman. And the one about inventing Captain America, I think, was the title of it. And so I'll link to those two other book reviews in this episode.
What was your favorite?
Inventing Iron Man. What was it? Inventing Iron Man is my favorite.
Was it?
And it made me think the most, I think. And I think it was really the combination of the melding of hardware and software and biology.
Batman was my favorite.
That intrigued me the most. Was it really?
Yeah.
Why?
I really liked how we talked comparatively between, this is like if Bruce Wayne didn't do these things, like average Bruce Wayne, if Bruce Wayne was like a twin, this is like the Bruce Wayne who didn't do the stuff, and here's Bruce Wayne who did. So I like that comparison about how we can really change ourselves based on like a real life comparison.
Okay. So this... Marvel created the Iron Man character, Stan Lee and a couple other guys. Let's see, I wanted to remember them. Larry Lieber, Don Heck, and Jack Kirby created the Iron Man character in 1963.
Wow, that was
for Marvel, Marvel Comics. Amazing. And the first episode was called Tales of Suspense, number 39. Came out in 1962-63.
Very cool. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, so yeah. Stan Lee was those guys were geniuses in creating this character, and I thought it was really interesting in the foreword of this book. There's a character called Warren Ellis, a guy named Warren Ellis, and apparently he was contacted by Marvel to breathe new life into the Iron Man character, to make him more modern, to kind of evolve the technology and everything. And so he's an interesting character too. I want to read more about him. I think he has done a lot of sci-fi writing, a lot of movie scripts and comic scripts and stuff like that.
Cool.
Okay, so the top five takeaways from this book. Number one, the whole concept of the book is it possible to create a modern day Iron Man? And so Dr. Zare looks at all the different ways in which this might be possible, looking at current technologies, possible scientific innovations and trends to see if it would be possible to generate or to create an Iron Man suit. So looking at things that are currently, you know, out there in the field of technology, innovations that are currently going on, it certainly seems like that would be possible given, you know, so spacesuits, like we have, you know, astronauts have evolved from the Apollo program all the way to the current SpaceX, and the spacesuits are evolving along with time and the progress of the space program. I think they've gotten a lot more maneuverable, a lot thinner, and things like that. So the technology is improving for man to exist and move around in space.
It's amazing.
There are companies developing like exoskeletons, things that are bigger. Like in the movie Avatar, a guy can just like jump in this exoskeleton and move it around. That's kind of the idea, right?
Yeah.
It's a suit, but it's not a suit. It's more of a like large machine that you drive, kind of like a car.
Like a drone.
Kind of like a little bit like it doesn't. I'm not talking about things that fly.
I understand, but the concept, it's like a drone where you have like, and you're moving that thing around.
Driving it.
Yeah.
There's a company called, he mentions in the book, a company called Cyberdyne that's got a HAL robot suit. One of the guys' name is Yoshiyuki Sakai. Some other contemporaries are the man who has built the flying wing, Yves Rossi. I think he's Swiss, and he's built like a little wing that you just strap on.
Your
back, and it's got like four kerosene rocket engines in it.
I'll take that to work.
So he can fly with that. You got to drop him out of a plane currently,
And
so he uses that downward momentum for the wing to get lift, and then he launches the rockets, and that gives him a lot of forward momentum. And he just uses his body and his arms and his legs to steer it.
That is
cool. So it's just basically a wing that he straps on and just drop it out of a plane and he goes, and he's got parachutes to help him land. Mm-hmm. And I really like that guy. He's got a TED Talk that was really fascinating. You learn a little bit about his character and his demeanor, as well as the hardware that he has strapped onto his back and how he flies that thing. So I really liked him. Felix Baumgartner, the guy from Austria who did that jump.
That was incredible.
Took that balloon up to the stratosphere and like jumped out in his spacesuit and broke the sound barrier on the way down. And Red Bull's got an amazing documentary of that whole event. And I watched it again and I still get, you know, my hands still sweat watching that. It's really cool. But that's
well, you're scared of heights.
And I'm terrified of the heights, so just the whole thing, I can't imagine going through that. I can't imagine. Yeah. I would not have the mental fortitude even to do that. But it's all about the spacesuit, right?
And so protecting you.
That spacesuit up in the stratosphere, protecting him going through the sound barrier. So he was the first guy to do it. So now everybody's like, it is possible to have a suit protect us from going through the sound barrier when that big boom goes off, you know?
So knowing you would have a suit like that, would you do it?
Hell no. So these guys are all, Richard Browning.
He's incredible.
The Brit who runs gravity.co, he's got the jetpacks on his arms. The mechanism, fuel or whatever is on his back, but then he's got the jets on his arms so he can steer with the jets like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's another, you know, possibility of, you know, some people have called him Iron Man even, but and we'll put some video of some of his demo flights that we saw in person, and the dog's gonna walk right in front of some of the video that we took of him at Remars in 2022, Amazon Remars, and we saw him give some demo flights and saw him in person, so we'll plop some videos into this.
Amazing story. Yeah.
And he also did a talk on stage. It was really, really motivational and inspirational, so that was a lot of fun. Okay, so we have contemporary examples of people flying around in suits and doing different things, so it is possible, but there are a lot of caveats to having a suit that, you know, mimics really what Tony Stark had in the movie Iron Man. So the name of the suit was called the NTU-150, or the Neuromimetic Telepresence Unit. And one of the reasons it was kind of given that name is because it was a little bit of an autonomous hardware. It did not directly interface with the brain, but it could interface, the human inside of the suit could, what is her problem?
She wants you to better.
the hardware of the suit could interface with the computer, and the computer would drive the flying and the firing, the missiles and rockets and whatever else the suit does. And so looking at contemporary examples of how humans can interface with computers, that we do have examples. There's one company, referenced in the book called BrainGate, and it's kind of, the picture of it is a cable that goes, it is surgically inserted into the top of the head for people who can't move around and stuff like that.
Oh,
and
wow.
So the cable is to help them. What is the deal with her?
No, lay down.
The cable helps people interface with the computer, and the computer can do things on their behalf, but it is an invasive piece of hardware that goes into the skull and into the brain.
Huh.
And that kind of leads you to kind of a cyborg type of implementation of the brain-computer interface. which I'm kind of totally against. I don't really want technology, like, you know, mm-mm, melding with my biology in any way. I want, like, more of a, it is possible to connect with the electromagnetic signals in the brain.
Yeah.
Apparently that's what's going on up there, is electrical signaling. And so, there are examples of, technologies that can read those brain signals and do things on behalf of what it thinks your brain signals mean.
Yeah, yeah. The neurotransmitters. Yeah.
But it's an imperfect thing. Like Neuralnet. Mm-hmm. Neuralnet is a company out there right now that's doing something similar. There's a whole bunch of other companies as well who, and a lot of research going on in that field. But it's apparently imperfect because it's, your brain waves change a lot. Mm. And so it takes training, it takes, mm-hmm, practice in order to get that interface working. So you need to, like, learn how the interface works in order to drive it, and that takes a lot of training.
Yeah.
It's like a muscle. You have to keep practicing with it. And so he mentions that that is one of the key drawbacks or caveats about creating a modern Iron Man type of machine. Like, we watched it on the video, like, or the movie Iron Man, where what was the evil character's, I forget his name right now, but the guy who worked in Stark Industries, who was the other,
yeah,
character.
It starts with an O, not Odin's
Obadiah Stane,
thank you,
or something like, yep, that. He created a copy of the machine, the suit that Tony Stark had, and he just jumps into it and starts using it.
Yeah, yeah, like it's nothing.
And, he points out that technically right now with the technology that we have, that just wouldn't be possible because of the amount of training it takes,
yeah,
to figure out how to use that brain-computer interface.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was really intriguing to think about as well. So, yeah, I don't want anything connected to me. I just want to be able to, like, telepathically tell the machine what to do in some way. So time is another thing. Tony Stark created, in the movie, he created this this armor, this suit that he wore in a cave in Afghanistan with the help of a guy who was imprisoned with him. Mm-hmm. And the author, Dr. Zer, points out that that's very highly unlikely that you could create a system like that in such a short amount of time, that he thinks it's going to take a lot of time to create all of those systems and, mm-hmm, that type of suit. And I think he's probably right. In fact, as I was thinking about it more, so his estimate was it would take a research company probably 40 years or so, given the current state of the art, mm, to develop such a thing. And I kind of think that's probably optimistic. I think it's probably a much longer time frame, given all the obstacles that we might have to overcome.
And that's not even talking about policy and bureaucracy, that's just tech.
Yeah.
And
to think that Tony Stark was 21 when he took over Stark Industries, and given the amount of time it would have taken to actually create that suit, he'd probably be in his 60s or 70s before he could actually use it. Plus, when you think about fighter pilots, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Zer points this out in the book, that it takes fighter pilots about 7 to 10 years, mm, to get trained up in all the disciplines that they need to learn before they're actually a decent fighter pilot.
Wow.
So, I mean, basically, when you're flying around in a suit like that, you're a fighter pilot,
yeah,
to an extent.
That's
so
true.
Just the training alone to use, just to fly, you, mm-hmm, know, would probably take a great amount of time.
Yeah.
So time is a very important aspect of the whole engineering and learning how to fly and all that good stuff. And I thought that was a really interesting thing, yeah, as well. Power. The power required to drive such a suit would, you know, it would have to be clean, limitless energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have
any... It's not
any...
an arc reactor?
Well, the arc reactor is the solution in, yeah, the story for that. But we don't have a contemporary solution for that. We don't have the technology right now for limitless, clean power. And Eve Rossi, the guy who has the flying wing, he points that out as well, mm, that in the book, that so one of the things he wants to be able to do is to take off from the ground wearing, mm, his thing, but he doesn't have the clean safe energy to propel him up into the air to take flight right now. He has to be dropped from a plane or catapulted in some way to get the momentum he needs to take flight, like a glider.
Yeah.
So he points out that the key aspect of all of these technologies, the central piece of it, which ironically is the central piece in the suit,
yeah,
is the arc reactor. It is the power. It is the clean limitless power that you need to power such a suit. So, and finally, what kind of mind would be needed to create such a technology?
Oh, yeah.
So you've got the story of Tony Stark, who's a genius, obviously, and he's able to create this technology in the cave under duress. And, you know, his duress was one of the things that highly motivated him. I don't know what my dog's issue is today. She's all over us. The duress was what helped him and motivate him to create this fantastic technology. He had the shrapnel getting close to his heart. So, how do I keep that out? I got to generate this crazy power source to help keep the shrapnel from killing me. And, oh, by the way, that's good enough to power the suit.
Convenient. And he built it in 3 months.
Yeah, right. So, obviously, that is not going to happen in reality. Even a single genius is probably not enough to create that technology. We're going to have to build that technology over time on the shoulders of giants, just like most great scientific discoveries. And we have a lot of contemporary people working in that space right now that... Yeah. You know, like the Felix Baumgartners of the world and Richard Browning and Eve Rossi and all these other guys who are doing stuff in this kind of space are all contributing to the knowledge base that we need to build such a suit at some time in the future if somebody were so inclined. But today it's, you know, we don't have anything but this wonderful story. Iron Man, the movie, we watched it again after reading this book, and I'm still just blown away just by the special effects alone. Yeah. And the computer modeling that went into that is just fantastic. You know, the guy's just standing there and he gets all this armor like put on him, and the autonomous machines that help him out, and the humor involved and all of that. Man, it's such a good movie.
We should watch really, part two really tonight. Good.
Yeah, let's watch it.
Okay.
So it's a lot of fun. Stan Lee is... You know, the characters he creates are... didn't even know who Stan Lee was until I met Cindy, and so now I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Marvel, and I love how the comics are helping to drive technology in some way, and that's a lot of fun to see as well.
Well, that's totally our generation, because we grew up with them. We grew up with the comics, so for us, it's like, what's possible? So Stan Lee really drove what's possible in our future.
Think about it. These guys started dreaming this up in the 60s, man. It's so, so cool. So... I love that combination of art and... Oh, speaking of what kind of mind it would take to create this stuff, Dr. Zare points out that you really probably won't be deriving this level of work from somebody from a STEM degree. Because those types of people are overeducated, is what he says.
They're not...
They're too narrow-minded and too overeducated.
The creativity is bred out of you.
You need the creative energy as well as the life... threatening motivation to build something like this.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really fascinating take on what kind of person it would take to do that. And he references Einstein, he references Thomas Edison, who failed 100 times before he got something working. You know, so the creativity and the discipline to keep trying stuff that's not working over and over and over again, and how difficult that can be if you're flying around in a suit and crashing all the time. Because you may not even live long enough to keep doing it.
That's so, the Dewey learning right there.
Dewey learning?
Yep.
Oh, here we go.
It's all John Dewey right there.
I get what they're doing. So that's our episode 73, reviewing of the book, Inventing Iron Man, and really enjoyed it. You would probably enjoy it if you read it as well, if you haven't already. And we will see you next book.
There is a process you can go in where you work out as quickly as possible. You can go and test that idea. This is what we do all the time. And go and take the risk of it failing. The critical thing is, and I used to do this running a trading book, and now I'm doing Running Gravity, is if failure occurs, because it will happen all the time and it's a meaningful test, can you get back up again? Obviously from a safety point of view, but also reputationally and financially. And that is our magic source that we use to keep pushing this whole crazy journey ever forward.